Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Mark Driver at Rathinny Vineyards on a beautiful day, isn't it? It's cold, it's winter, sun's shining, only a few clouds in the sky.
Yeah, and it's the beginning of November. It's spectacular, isn't
it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's been cold. We started to get some frost through, so most of the leaves now are off the vines, but it's still a beautiful day.
Oh, no, it's lovely. And last night was one of those, you knew it was going to be cold today because of it was clear sky last night, which means you get really cold. I didn't have the fire going at home. I wanted to, but my wife said, no, let's not do it tonight. Like a nice fire going. I noticed you've got your Flint Barn finished. Last time we were here about 3 years ago, they were building the Flint Barn or renovating it massive changes to it. Mm-hmm. What is the? Do you want to just tell our listeners what? Because you've got two buildings that aren't really core to Rathfinny, from what you can tell, but which is the Flint Barn and the Gun Room. And what are they? And what are you trying to achieve with them?
Okay, so the Gun Room is a small retail outlet that we opened about 3 years ago. It's right in the centre of Alfriston, which is our local village. And the idea there was really to publicise what Rathfinny is all about. So it was all about building brand awareness for Rathfinny as a wine brand prior to us actually having wine in the market, which is always a tricky thing to do. But we're trying to build brand awareness. The village gets several thousand visitors a year. We've had something like 30,000 visitors to just to the Gun Room over the last year. And so all those people are coming in, they're hearing about Rathfinny, they're buying Rathfinny-related products, so branded wine-related products. But also, they've been able to taste some of our still wine.
Yeah, I've the Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, I tried that earlier.
That's correct. So we've had, we released a still wine in 14, which was a bit of Pinot Blanc blended with some Chardonnay. And then we released a Pinot Gris Pinot Blanc blend last year, which was very popular. Mm. In 2015, we did the same in 16. Those have proved really popular.
It's very nice aromatic. You know, it has a really nice Pinot Gris type of smell to it.
Yeah, it's got a nice body to it. It's still a nice crisp dry white wine, but it's got a good balance to it. So we've been able to allow people to taste it. That's the Gun Room. The Flint Barns we established really for seasonal workers. So we're in quite a remote part of East Sussex. We don't have a lot of horticulture around us. We've got a lot of arable land around us, but that doesn't really require an awful lot of people working in the fields. So we felt that we needed somewhere where people could come and stay, particularly during harvest, but also during picking, pruning, mm-hmm. In January, February, and March.
Yeah.
And so we built the Flint Barns really for seasonal workers. And for the last couple of vintages, the last couple of harvests, we've had about a dozen people staying for the harvest in the Flint Barns. I think we had close to 20 people staying during the most recent harvest, so 2017. So it's been great. So people have been coming down, been able to stay over. We've got a good team of people out into the fields every day. And these people are coming from further afield. We have people from Scotland. We had somebody from Dubai, somebody from Toronto. We had some people from Sweden last year. This year, some people from Nottingham and Edinburgh and all over the UK came and stayed. But they've also proved, the Flint Barns have proved really popular with tourists as well. So wine tourism is just developing in the UK. And I think it will expand over time. And as we've got more wine for sale and to taste, then I think it'll be more popular for people to come and stay. So they generally get booked out most weekends for people coming down, walking around the area. The South Downs are a beautiful area to come and explore. And then we have various groups who stay during the week. We get a lot of educational groups. So we get school groups who come down and use the buildings. We get a lot of corporates who come down and use the building, so they're doing sort of off-sites, away days, that sort of thing. So a real mixture of use, and it's proved incredibly popular, more than we expected, actually, is a real bonus. And now we're starting to do lunches and meals and really for the local clientele. And we've got about 1,000 people on a waiting on a mailing list to do events. And these events get sold out generally within 2 or 3 hours. So they're very, very popular.
The spec on the barn, the Flint barn, is actually quite high. Yeah. It is, you know, reasonably high spec for seasonal workers.
Because
I've seen what they normally stay in, especially in New Zealand, and it's quite a lot lower standard.
but we had the view that if you treat people well and you give them nice accommodation, then A, they're going to probably come back, and that's what we found. This year, several of the people who were staying last year came back again this year, which is great. And B, they're going to say nice things about it. And hopefully, they're our brand ambassadors. They're the people who are going to go out and talk about Rathfinney and talk to all their friends. Now, if they stayed in some dreadful accommodation, then, they tend to tell a lot more people, oh, it was horrible. You know, it's cold running water and it was disgusting. Whilst if they've stayed in somewhere nice, hopefully they're going to say, yeah, it was brilliant. The accommodation was great. And so we get people coming back and they're saying nice things about it. And people come back and they book it and for significant birthdays and weddings and all kinds of things. So it's proved really, really popular.
Okay. You've got a bit of a building site going on. You've got two very large buildings being built at the moment. One's for wine storage, when you have some wine to store, and the other one is your bottling line. I think, is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So one of the buildings is wine storage. So we've run out of space in the winery that we're sitting in now. So for the last 3 years, we've been storing our wine on lees. In a temperature-controlled area downstairs. We outgrew that last year, so we had always planned to build a bigger cellar, so a temperature-controlled cellar, which is what we're just finishing off now. So all the wine that's in the cellar downstairs will go across the road into that new on-lees wine store, which is temperature-controlled. It'll keep the wine at about 12, 13 degrees throughout the year. And then as our production increases, clearly we've got enough storage space to be able to age our wine. Because I really believe in aging sparkling wine on lees, so on the yeast lees, in the bottle, for a minimum of 3 years. But then we'll be able to age some of our vintage wines. And certainly last year and probably this year, actually, are two good vintage wines, which we'll probably be able to age for a little bit longer. Maybe 5 to 6 years, and just increase some of those autolytic characteristics within the bottle.
Buildings themselves are, I don't want to say too nasty a thing because they are agricultural buildings, but, some people dig things out into chalk, into the site. Because you've got chalk, you could have gone underground, which would have been quite good from a heating point of view or cooling point of view.
Yeah.
But you've gone for sort of classic long run steel sort of buildings.
Yeah.
Is that a cost thing or?
Yeah, it's principally a cost thing. So we had it priced up to dig down. And this is a big building. It's 2,500 square meters. So so it's about 75 meters by 36 meters wide. It's a big building. It's partially dug into the slope anyway, because it fits into the chalk. But if we were going to sink it below ground, the price was just prohibitive. I'm very envious of the French and the fact that they had Romans dig out cellars across the Champagne region.
Yeah.
We didn't have that in the South Downs, sadly. They built a few villas and things, but they didn't dig big cellars. So it's just prohibitively expensive to dig it into the ground. And in fact, if you go into Champagne now, most of the big wine producers are storing their wine in temperature-controlled buildings above the ground, because it makes a lot more sense. Because you can heavily insulate these buildings.
Yeah, I can see the insulation going on the sides now.
Yeah, so they, you know, they shouldn't need a lot of temperature control, and they won't need a lot of heating and chilling because they, you know, eventually they'll be full and that'll keep their own temperature anyway.
So at the moment, the buildings are, you've got a management office, you've got the Flint Barn, yeah. You've got the gun shop and gun room in town.
That's correct.
And then you've got these two, a winery,
yeah.
And then these two large buildings for bottling and for storage. Yeah,
so, the bottling building also... it's sort of wine processing. It takes the wine, so it's after it's finished clarification and it's been blended, then we can move that across the road into the across the track into the processing.
How do you do that? Are you going to move the entire tank with a forklift, or are you going to run a hose?
No, we've got a tank. We've already got a pipe that's so we can transfer. We can pump it across into blending mm-hmm. tanks there. So we'll do all our bottling there, but also we'll do all our disgorging. So we've got all the riddling machinery going in, so we can do all our riddling, our disgorging, and then our labeling and packaging, and everything will take place in that building, and then it'll be dispatched.
Okay. So you've got one building specifically for winemaking with all your new presses and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so we got one which is sort of wine fermentation, and then the finished product then goes and gets bottled in a separate building.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, that makes sense. And tell me, the wines you've got, because you mentioned the Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc blend. Mm. You've got some wines aging at the moment. So what is going to be the classic Rethvenny line in, say, 2 or 3 years' time when things settle down a little bit?
Okay, so last year is pretty much the classic year. We had so 2016 was a really good year for us. We had a very good summer. If you remember, towards the end, September and October were really warm, and they ripened the fruit off. The summer itself was pretty dull. July and August were pretty dull. But September and October were fantastic in 16. So we had some great fruit last, this was the previous year. And so we made what will be essentially our staple of wines. So we make a classic cuvée, which is a blend of Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay. So the three classic varieties. We made a Blanc de Noir and a Blanc de Blanc. We made a rosé.
Sparkling, so, all sparkling.
All sparkling, yeah. So those are our classic and what we might do in very good years is some of that maybe a vintage wine. So these are, they're all vintages at the moment, mm-hmm. but going forward we'll be starting to, from this year onwards, we'll be starting to hold back some wine as reserve wine. Mm-hmm. So we'll be starting to look at smoothing out the good and the bad of, you know, yeah. the poorer vintages, to ensure that you get a good steady classic cuvée, non-vintage.
Okay, but you've got a Pinot Gris in the ground.
Yeah.
So what's that going into?
Well, we initially, when we planted it back in 2012, the idea was that we may use some of that in some of our blend, and we tried it this year, but it wasn't really adding anything. So we've used it as a still wine. And it's proved very popular, so we'll probably continue to use it as a still wine. We'll look at it again this year, I think, during our blending process, and we may use some of it, the Pinot Gris or the Pinot Blanc, in the classic. But I think if we do, it'll be in very, very small percentages. As I said, you know, we tried it last year, it didn't really add.
Is it small percentages because you haven't got the volume to put into it, or is it small percentages because you don't think it, you don't want, because... If it's over about 5%, you've got to put it on the label, don't you? Whereas if you're trying to be a classic champagne, even though Pinot Blanc and Pinot Gris are acceptable grapes in champagne.
No, in Europe, if you put any grape description on the label, you have to include every grape that's in the
bottle. No, not every grape.
Every grape.
Are you sure?
Every grape. Every single grape. Now, a lot of people in Europe don't.
Okay.
But they should. Those are the rules, European rules.
I thought there was a percentage. Once you got to a certain percentage,
you right. have to put every single... If you put a grape variety on the label, on the front of the label, if you say it's Pinot Blanc and you've got a little bit of Pinot Gris in there, you have to say Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris. And then if you've got a bit of Chardonnay, you have to say Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Pinot or Chardonnay. Okay. So it doesn't matter what percentage, you have to label every single grape variety. If you call it something else, this is what we...
Classic cuvée.
Yeah, classic cuvée, exactly. You can put anything in it, and you don't have to mention. But if you mention any grape variety, you have to tell every... You have to say what everything's in there. A lot of people ignore that rule. Unfortunately, we have a very robust wine standards authority, and they police that. So a couple of years ago, we had a blend which had Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, but there's also a little bit of Pinot Noir from a second pressing, and also a little bit of Chardonnay, which we blended in to, you know, the overall blend. So we couldn't call it Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, so we called it Hobbs Hoth. Although it was 90-odd percent Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc. So no, you have to put every grape variety on the label.
All right. And certainly, in some countries, it's
But this is European ruling, so yeah. They should all be doing that, but they don't.
So, does that mean, like, at the moment, I popped into the gun room on the way in and tried your Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris. Yeah. I even tried your some of your gin that you've got there as well.
Yes.
Which I understand you're sending some of your. Would you call it you got your main press, your cuvée, and then you've got your tie, which is the two presses that you normally think about with champagne. You know, the first one being hopefully the best juice, then you got your tie, which is the next best. And then what did you call the third press?
The French call it a rebêche.
Rubbish, yeah.
So for years, Jonathan's been saying, oh, the rubbish is over there. And I kept thinking, oh, he's saying that's the rubbish. And I'm sure it is. That's the English translation of rebêche. But essentially, it's your third pressing. And the third pressing in champagne is typically sent off to be distilled. And last year, we sent ours off to be distilled by Silent Pool.
Yep.
And they made a really good grape spirit. It's very smooth. It's really quite pleasant, actually.
Mm.
So half of it went into barrel to make a brandy, which we'll probably be releasing next year sometime. And then the other half we used to blend with a grain spirit, and we made a gin. So we chose botanicals in conjunction with Silent Pool, and we made a really nice gin. It's very smooth. It's a real sipping gin. People are, you know, they're loving it in things like martinis because it's so smooth.
Yeah.
It's it really works really, really well. And the grape spirit adds a sort of like a tenth botanical to it. So it's proved really popular, particularly with the local pubs and bars and restaurants. And now we're selling it into London as well.
I presume you're not getting huge volumes of it because by the time you've distilled it and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. No, it's small amounts. So it's only a few thousand bottles a year or so.
Yeah. At least you've got a product in the gun room now. Well, it's two products.
We've got two products.
you've got a tasting room, but you've got no wine to taste.
But you don't like the tea towels and the you know, all the other branded goods.
I didn't really get that far.
No, exactly. So next year is the exciting bit because we're going to be releasing our first sparkling wine. So our 2014 Blanc de Blanc, which is tasting really, really well at the moment. And that's now been in the bottle for close to 3 years. Early next year, it'll be ready to go. It'll be 3 years on the lees,
mm-hmm.
and ready to be disgorged. And we'll be releasing that in the summer, so early June of next year.
Early June next year, okay. It's a Blanc de Blanc, is it? Mm. Yeah, okay, so that's Chardonnay.
It's 100% Chardonnay.
Is that the grapes that I... Remember I came out one year when you were planting the grapes. Was that the vines going in the ground then?
Yeah, that would have been these are the vines from 2012. So we had a very small crop of Chardonnay, and then we had a small crop of Pinot Blanc as well in 2014. A little bit of Pinot Noir, but it really wasn't... It was, you know, a few tons. It was nothing. So the vines were all so young.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Excellent. All right, then, Mark, I think we're going to wrap it up there. But I'm quite interested to explore next week where you're going, because I think we've got a good feel for where you're at now.
Mm.
Let's find out where you're heading.